This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Panoply, panorama, panpipe, pansy, aha, pansexual, knowing no boundaries of sex or gender. Sound interesting? Then join Sally on Sundays at noon for Out of the Pan. All those gender questions making you think too hard? Whether it's transgender, bisexual, polyamorous or beyond, we'll throw those questions into the pan and cook up the answers for you. So go on, push that gender envelope, only on 3CR 855am digital and 3cr.org.au.
3CR 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au and 3CR On Demand. Out of the Pan with Sally, first broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. 3CR broadcasts from the lands of the Kulin Nations at the intersection of the contested lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong peoples, and we pay respects to elders past, present and emerging. Hello to any Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander, First Nations people tuning in to the program today. Most lovely to have you. And we acknowledge that all the lands were stolen and never ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. I'm Sally Goldner. I use the pronouns she and her, and Out of the Pan, as we like to say, a show covering pansexual issues, noon through one every Sunday. Next Sunday, of course, Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time. I lose an hour of beauty sleep. God knows I need all I can get. Anyway, that's we'll worry about that next week. Let's live in the present moment, and I'll remind you of how you can get in touch with the show. You can email outofthepan855@gmail.com. You can SMS 61456 751 215. Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Sal Gold Said So. And that's the bottom line. And look for posts on Facebook, Out of the Pan, 3CR, 855 AM Melbourne, and Sally Goldner. And postal address, PO Box 1277, Collingwood 3066. Any opinions I express on the show are strictly my own. We'll give a content note today of a general nature for discussion of grief and loss, particularly of a close loved one. So you may need to contact QLife, including Switchboard in Victoria and Tasmania, 1800 184 527, and also Rainbow Door, 1800 729 367. And we opened up today. There, I've got it out of the way first. That was Flash and the Pan, including our run of Buy and Pan tracks for Celebrate Bisexuality Month. Hey, St. Peter, two great Australian artists jumping in there like a frog in the throat, so to speak. And Vander and Young, of course, behind that. Well, Fringe Festival is underway. It's all happening. And the artists... it's just amazing that there are so many great queer and trans artists, and I have one sitting opposite me in the 3CR studio. It is my pleasure to welcome to the 3CR studios Eddie Patterson. Eddie, welcome.
Hi, Sally. Thanks so much for having me today.
Huge pleasure. And if it's okay to ask, can I just check in with which pronouns you use, if any?
Absolutely. So I use they, he pronouns.
They, he, so we've established very quickly an important part of things. And, well, not necessarily gender. A trans man friend of mine used to say that although earlier in his life he gave birth, he said parenting's a role, not a gender, which I think is a lovely approach. We are talking about parents in the broadest sense of the word today, because you've got one of the many wonderful Fringe shows, Dad Genes, which we want to talk about as part of all your great work. It's got lots of great themes, but I'm going to ask something different first. If there can be such a thing, what attracted you to try to do stand-up comedy or comedy of any sort?
I had always, I think, had a secret love for stand-up in the back of my head. I started my artistic career as a much more kind of straight down the line actor. I went and I did the drama school thing. I did VCA. I was a woman the entire time. I had long auburn hair, and I thought I would graduate and be playing Juliet. I thought I was a bit of an ingenue, but turns out I was more of your classic trans mask jester hanging out in the background. And the more I got any opportunity to do anything that was comedic or silly or really sent things up, I just loved it so much. So I finally tried my hand at some stand-up, instantly fell in love. Then my life got turned a little bit upside down, so I did take a break from it. And this show is basically me coming back to stand-up kind of after taking the time I needed, which there's a lot of kind of the proof of the pudding in the content of the show of kind of what was going on in my life, big things. But I just, I feel a little corny sometimes saying it, but I just think that comedy is one of the greatest ways to be able to talk to people as people. And I feel like really have that opportunity to make people feel seen and to bring people on a journey where, like, maybe they do change their minds a little bit. Like, laughter is such great lubrication for difficult conversations. And I just got obsessed with that. Like, what you can broach in comedy, it can be so difficult, but it's still so on the table because we're here, we're laughing, and I'm going to keep you safe through the laughter.
I think that's awesome. I don't want to dispute a guest, but I don't think it's really corny. I think it's great. So,
oh, thank you.
I've just got to ask out of curiosity, where and how long ago did you do the first stand-up gig of any sort in front of a relatively public, unknown audience?
So I am awful with remembering the timeline of my own life. So let's see if I can get there. The first set of stand-up I ever did was at a room that the amazing Scout Boxer was running, which was Hairbrush Comedy, which used to go up at the Grace Darling.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to kind of sneak my way into doing a set at the Grace Darling because originally that was happening all in Scout's like living room as a very informal kind of thing. It was still around like lockdown times. Mm. Actually, I think we were a smidge before it, potentially. Maybe we were in it. But then the whole kind of vibe of it got picked up and was no longer in Scout's living room. So that would have been, about 5 years ago now. And I think I took about a full 2 year break from it in there. I was not stepping on stage for a little while I was figuring things out with my gender and my life. I mean, like every artist, the lockdowns really hit me hard and it was hard to get back to creation as well around that time. And I don't even think I was going by Eddie when I first started stand-up. I even think it was still... I think I was just beginning to experiment with labels of gender fluid,
mm-hmm.
and I was starting to inch closer and closer to realizing that I was non-binary. But yeah, it does kind of feel like a lifetime ago, but hilariously, I've taken this big break and I feel like I've come back to it as like a completely new person.
Well, look, it's fair to say to some, we are the same person when we're trans. We've lived the same life and we're somewhat the same soul, but we perhaps move to a greater degree of authenticity, which can make us feel different. And this is, one of the things that you touch on in Dad Jeans is your journey. So let's start there. I always say, let's give us some teasers, not spoilers, as to what sort of things you've had to deal with. We'll start in the middle. Why not? Because we're going to be non-binary rather than start at an end. Coming out as trans in your 20s, T for T relationships and queer sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's dive into it. What sort of things, let's get a little more detail. Oh, dear, excuse me, on that. And, as I say, tease us as to what more that's about.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the show in general, kind of overall, the show Dad Jeans is about the year that I started testosterone only a month before my dad passed away from prostate cancer. So a cancer that the first step of treatment is going to really affect your hormones. So there was all this journey with hormones and masculinity and grief. And I had also just started a new relationship, which is the beautiful relationship I'm still in. My partner is also non-binary and trans mask. They're a full they, them though. So it was this incredibly big time of change for me. Like I had a new relationship, a new gender identity. I started, going through some elements of medical transition and then grief. So it was like the snow globe was just fully shaken up.
Look, totally understood that. That is, I mean, any one of those things is getting into the biggish area. And I mean, whether they're in big inverted commas, good, positive things, or other inverted commas, negative, challenging things. They're big. They can bring up emotions and awe and feels and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot going on there. And, you know, that's, you know, a lot at one time. And, you know, sort of there's so much, you know, to talk about in that alone. And yet you've, the thing that always gets me with great stand-ups is you've managed to get some, you know, some humor and emotion out of it, which is must be challenging in lots of ways.
Well, this is the funny thing. I think even as I was going through the experience, I always knew I was going to write a comedy about it at the end, that it was going to be stand-up. Because I do have a practice of writing one-person shows, which are much more theatrical and dramatic. I have tried my hand at playwriting before. Like, I do... There were times where I was like, maybe this is a dramatic play. Maybe this is how I want to tell the story. And it was just so clear to me that it was a comedy, because there were so many things, even as they were happening, that kept making us laugh. Like, I think that's one of the most surprising things about going through those times where, like, you and your family are in the trenches. And I do also think I'm very fortunate with the family that I have, that when we are there, a thing that we always seek is the humor. Like, even my dad in these moments was sending himself up, and he was cracking the jokes half the time. You know, it makes it bearable. It makes it survivable in a large part. I know that really is kind of the saving grace for us. But there was so much comedy already inbuilt into the situation. There was so much left on the cutting room floor. A lot of that I also realized was maybe too gross to broach. My my director did ask me to leave out the couple minutes I wrote about the catheter bag and sleeping on the floor of the hospital room and kind of waking up face to face with a catheter bag. Turns out I'm really comfortable with gross things as a comedian, so it's always good to have the external eye to rein it in. But yeah, you know, in the tragedy you find the comedy, in the comedy you find the tragedy. It's just kind of the way of life, I think.
Yeah, my mind did go to non-binary comic Jesse Ryan, who did the show a few years ago, Functional Bottom, which also mentioned catheter bag. So maybe you two can swap notes or form a duo or something.
Yeah, we've got a duo show in us about catheters.
why not? We've got, as you say, we've got to laugh at things. But you also, you know, sort of mentions here that, you know, which, you know, sort of, can someone please laugh at their dead dad jokes already? Tell us about that bit.
Well, I'm someone who I'm very comfortable in the comedy, and I am the one who is cracking the jokes, and I am trying to diffuse the tension, and I have these beautiful people sitting in front of me, and it's usually the people who haven't experienced grief are the ones who feel like they can't laugh. I'll crack a joke, and I will see the entire journey go across someone's face until they settle on stoic, reverent silence and maybe a touching of the hand, and I'm like, oh, I thought that was a good one. But turns out I'm just making everyone a little bit sad.
Well, look, it's, you know, comedy, you know, has to touch some emotions and, well, you know, sort of also put, for lack of better words on the spur of the moment, some sort of thoughtful message out there. You know, it has to do the proverbial light and shade, so to speak. But if it helps people feel and let go of a bit of the emotion that might be blocking them, then that can be a good thing, and it gives them a smile for a moment. Yeah.
But it's this funny thing as well, I think, the way that people want to hold space for you, especially when it's an experience they haven't had themselves. And I think that was a point where I really saw both transition and grief kind of overlap for me. I had a lot of beautiful people in my life who wanted to have these conversations with me, but I think they felt really out of their depth. You know, a lot of my cis friends didn't quite know how to interact with the jokes that I would make about my transness. And a lot of my friends who hadn't experienced grief wouldn't know how to interact with the jokes I was making about having a dead dad, which was amazing to be able to find the people who were both trans and also had dead dads, my target demographic. But I think that that can happen as well. Like sometimes as a trans person, when you're talking to cis people about gender and transition, they can kind of get this serious glaze over their face. Like they're holding space, but they don't really know how to engage in the conversation.
Yeah. No, look, it is a challenging thing. And I mean, it's, you know, it is one of these taboo topics of society that we don't deal with grief, let alone of close loved ones like immediate family, parents, siblings, partners, that sort of thing, and then grandparents, and then we'll say rippling out. But we don't deal with grief and loss of pets or jobs or careers or anything. It's just not talked about. And whether that's, well, masculinity of various sorts in society. What? Masculinity, including toxic masculinity, dominating? Who'd have thunk it? But it is something we need to deal with because, you know, we all face grief and loss in all these ways, or at least some of them, throughout our lives. And they're all going to be different. It's all unique. It all morphs into its own thing. So the more we can get it out there, and as you said, comedy can be a way to get these topics across in a way that, you know, sort of can do it in a way that gives people some, well, sense of relief or foundation underneath. It's a really good thing. But you have one other topic that you touch on in the show. Well, there's, of course, a million jokes about this part, you know, sort of growing up in the 2000s in Queensland. And all right, I'll say it now. Congratulations, Brisbane Lions. Yes, that's a relatively good part about Queensland at the moment.
Go to Lions.
But yes, growing up there when, you know, look, it was tough enough being trans in the, I'll say, more progressed areas of Australia like Sydney, Canberra, Melbourne in the 2000s. It still wasn't easy on any level. And of course, we know, you know, stating the obvious, it's not a proverbial bed of roses now, but we all, you know, the sort of largest, more outlying states, you know, Queensland, South Oz, West Oz, you know, they're, and particularly, I don't know if you're in urban or regional and rural areas, but tell us a bit more about that one, because that's an important factor as well.
Yeah, and I was really urban. I was pretty inner city Brisbane. And even then, like, especially back in like 2006 was kind of when I was going into like middle school, into high school, so kind of more coming into consciousness, really recording the memories then. You know, it was still so behind the times. And even just with basic information, like, of course, I experienced and encountered a lot of overt homophobia. The misogyny was just through the roof. And it's this weird thing where I almost can't even say I experienced transphobia, because I think in order to see the transphobia in my communities, trans people would have had to have been discussed at all. It was almost this complete radio silence on this topic, which obviously was an extension of the transphobia. It's the complete erasure. It's the complete ignoring that these people exist and are a part of our society at all. But I didn't know. Like, I remember the first time that I like heard about a trans person in the world, and it was the magazine cover where there was a trans man who had become pregnant. And I do not remember the magazine. I remember it was very blown up, like it was treated like a tabloid story. And I remember seeing that, and instantly my first thought was, why is everyone getting so worked up? That makes perfect sense. Like, I didn't understand what all the fuss was about from everyone. Like, it just seemed like this was an individual who was living their life to me. But that was the first time I even, like, encountered the concept of transness. And I wish I could say it like blew my brain open and gave me all of this realization. But I think by then I was about 13 or 14. I'd started to really like double down on my sense of identity. And it didn't even register to me that I was trans. Like, I wasn't someone who was closeted from myself or others. I just didn't know. I didn't know it was an option. I didn't know other people felt that way. I was someone who was always going to take my inner world and my identity, and I was going to believe the people around me, and I was going to do what I needed to make those two logics meet in the middle, which meant I was deeply confused about who I was as a person. I was wildly unhappy. There was also an extra little element to my backstory, which is my mother was actually in a queer relationship, in a same-sex relationship.
Okay.
Yeah, for 10 years in Queensland, which was completely closeted. It had to be, because they also... They had a business, a tennis coaching business, and a lot of their contracts were with private Catholic schools.
Oh.
So they would lose those contracts instantly.
Yep.
It was something that I had to keep completely private from all of my friends except for a very select few. And then even then there was a process of some people would find out and they would no longer be allowed to sleep over at my house or really be around me. So I knew there were high stakes to queerness from a very young age, especially when and where I was existing and living. And it created almost this fear-based reverence where since I was someone who I thought had had an easy life, I couldn't be queer because I wasn't having... suicidal ideations, or because I wasn't in a place where I was being abused or disowned, I almost thought that confirmed my straightness because I had seen a narrative laid out before me, which is not an accurate narrative. Mm. It was a very particular, singular narrative of queerness as a very difficult thing. I remember having conversations with my mother at the time where, you know, obviously I was... trying to lay down a little bit of foreshadowing, I think. But I remember asking, like, turning to my mum once and being like, oh, well, the really good thing about you being with a woman is you wouldn't care if one of your kids was queer. And I remember her saying, like, it would break my heart a little bit because I wouldn't wish this on anyone. It was hard. She lost a lot. Her family didn't talk to her for 2 years. Like, I was too young to remember.
Yeah.
But our grandparents weren't in our lives for a very long time. A lot of our family weren't in our lives for a very long time. She couldn't be out to friends and colleagues. It was a difficult thing. It also meant that, you know, when there were bad things happening in that relationship, there wasn't support.
Of course,
couldn't be spoken about. So I had a real tangle in my head to unknot before I could be honest and clear and happy with myself, with who I was and how I identified. And time and place and community added to that. It was difficult. The time and place and the people I was surrounded with, I think, added a lot of years to my gender and sexuality journey.
Yeah. Well, look, Eddie, first of all, thank you for your authenticity in sharing that. I think there's so many aspects that come out of that that I do wonder if we're, just 59 years, 11 and a half month old bi and trans person, I wonder whether I do sometimes forget what older people have gone through. So I'll honour your mum and partner there and definitely feels through the airwaves to the two of those two people. But I think there's an interesting aspect there that, you know, sometimes we think, oh, if we've got older queer people in our lives, it may be a positive, but, you know, it can throw up another wrinkle, which just goes to show we need to keep listening. And, you know, look, if it's any consolation, the first thing I really saw about trans was a doco, and it was about 16 at the time, 1980, and you can now watch this on YouTube somewhere, and it was a bit of a surprising source. Mike Willis, he used to host A Current Affair, and was a bit shock jockish, provocative, did a very sensitive documentary on trans. There was some past naming and probably not the terminology we'd use today, but the general tone was very good. It's called Tommy Doesn't Exist Anymore, because Tommy was an assigned male person who moved to being Bianca, and they had other trans people on as well. And, it sort of 1 out of 10 clicked. It was like, why am I watching this? And it wasn't until later that I realized, oh, that's why I was watching that secretly in my bedroom at the time and changing the channel when Dad walked by to go to the bathroom or something, which he had to do to get, walk past my bedroom to do that. Mm. But I suppose the question is, you know, what finally, to use your analogy, what unraveled the big knot? What began to unravel it? Was there a breakthrough moment?
Well, I think for me, the moment where, like, one, the dysphoria came so big I couldn't ignore it, was really, for me, it was being viewed as a woman. I know that sounds so reductive. I'll explain further. I was able to eke out, I think, elements of comfort in girl, in youth. I think there is almost something a lot more genderless about boy and girl as opposed to man and woman. Internally, for me, they feel different. There's more freedom in that childhood. You know?
Gotcha, yes.
Like, children can express themselves in much more, I think, gender-fucky ways before it gets put under the lens of, you know, I went through puberty and that was hell and I hated it, but also every other teenage girl I was talking to also hated puberty. No one liked their period when they were 14. So I thought we were all on the same page. But when I got into my mid-20s and I looked around and I was like, fuck, I'm meant to be feeling like an adult and I'm meant to be a woman, and that I couldn't do. I couldn't view myself as an adult and a woman at the same time. It was completely impossible to me. The only path to, like, adulthood that started feeling good for me was when I started identifying as non-binary. And I had, you know, I was finally, like, really building beautiful queer community around me, and I had more non-binary people in my life. And the more I listened to them, the more I was like, well, if that's what that is, then that's how I've been feeling this whole time. And it took a long time for those pieces to click. But yeah, it was this moment where I realized that I could be an adult who didn't have to be a woman. And also, I don't think I could have continued to actually grow as a person and mature into someone I viewed as an adult while still performing this thing that was so inherently fake. And really, it was a version of masking, I think, for me, yep, being a woman. I have also gone on a big journey with neurodivergence since then, which I do, yep, think was linked in. I was a very, you know, high masking person in general. I still am at a lot of times. But womanhood and masking were really hand in hand for me. It was my mask for a very long time. But yeah, and I think that all hit when I was about 24. So I got pretty late in life with it. I think I was a COVID baby. I was a COVID trans baby when I got enough some time to actually not be observed, think about what I wanted.
Yeah. Well, that's true. We had a lot of time to reflect on things in COVID. Not that we may have necessarily wanted to reflect on things or not on some things, but we did. Plenty in there. For what it's worth, I didn't make any real moves until 29. But of course, I think for all our listeners is whatever age you start to act on your authentic self, of course, is valid,
yeah, absolutely,
which is the critical thing. But I can also understand it's feeling like there's this, it's like there's a lid over you trying to grow as a total whole person in every aspect of that you just can't, you know, go on unless you break out that lid. And, gender and then sexuality began at 29, but I'm only on the some of the neurodivergence popped through. I identify with the HSP journey, but yeah. So I've been telling listeners back on the 10th of July, I found out I'm in the 94th percentile for autism at 59 years and 9 months, and then a week later, 93rd percentile for ADHD.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Yeah, welcome to the Spice Club, the Spice people. 8 days until the psychiatrist's appointment for official diagnosis. Monday the 6th, I'll keep listeners informed on that.
Please.
Knock it over while I think of it. So, yeah, there's so many parallels, and of course, we know of the massive overlap. I think it's now all of the rainbow. I have checked in with people with variation of sex characteristics as well, and there seems to be neurodivergence in there. So it's not just sexual orientation, gender identity. I was born 7 years after Tylenol was invented, and I don't think it made a difference. To heck with you, Mr. 4547 and Mr. Sellout Kennedy. Anyway, did I say that? I did. I don't really care because we've still got some freedom of expression over here and I'm using it. But coming back to your topic, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, sort of amazing material in there, Eddie. I mean, wow. How have you managed to get this down to around 50 to 55 minutes, even at getting rid of the catheter jokes?
Oh, it definitely wasn't 55 minutes to start with. And I am still trimming fat out of it left, right, and center. My director cannot say the phrase economy of words more. I am very wordy. I love to talk. I love big words. I love long sentences. So it's been a brutal editing process. I definitely make my shows in the editing process. I think I started with something that was about 50 pages of drafting, and then I got it down to a 35-page working draft, which is still too long. You know, a one-person show, that script, you wanted about 25 for me. That's my talking pace to get it to an hour.
Wowsies.
So just brutal, brutal, unadulterated cuts. Just
sort of, oh, okay, that joke looks like about an 8. That one's a 7.75. Out goes the 7.75 or whatever it is.
You pick the best ones and you keep them around, although there are still a few that they're my darlings and they're not going anywhere. There's about 2 jokes in the show that every time we do an edit, my director and my dramaturg look at me and they go, are we ready to part with these yet? And I'm like, no, I like them. And at least 3 people in the audience every night do too. So
all right,
they're for them.
Fair enough. Well, that's the thing. The comedian has got to have some fun as well, which is... the comic has got to have some fun.
The hill I will die on for this show is that people know who Sisyphus is and I'm allowed to make a Sisyphus joke.
All right, then. Rock on, so to speak. which, talking musical genres, if I didn't mention, you're doing, heaven forbid, 2 different things in French. Yeah. So I think if someone's going to give them a plug, it's going to be us. What's the other thing that's happening?
As well as doing Dad Jeans for Fringe, I will also be doing I will be a part of a one night only club Fringe event on the 11th of October. We have created the trans boy band of your dream. So we are called Heartthrob, HRT for heart. And that is myself, the amazing Han Arbuthnot, and also the incomparable Florian Wild. So we got 2 comedians and an amazing drag artist putting on an incredibly earnest boy band show. We are up there. It's not drag boy band. We're not sending it up. We're doing it. We are trying to be heartthrobs for you on that night.
Well, I'm sure you will be, because that's how it goes. Anything else you want to talk about your Fringe shows? Or have we got, I think we've got it pretty well.
I'll do the proper little plug for it if you
plug
want,
away.
Which
plug,
is,
plug.
So Dad Jeans will be 8:30 every night from October 13th to 19th at the Motley Bauhaus as a part of Melbourne Fringe.
The Motley Bauhaus, you know, they're sort of becoming a bit of a queer grassroots performance headquarters.
They're fantastic.
Well, not becoming, they pretty much are. You know, when this hair hole went away a few years ago, may it rest in peace. I think, you know, sort of a couple of blocks down the road and there we were. So
we'll pop back up.
Bless the Bauhaus.
And actually, the Motley, like, an amazing venue. And the team behind T for T, Trans Comedy Showcase, did the numbers. And the Motley has the most trans-led and created and performed shows this year for Melbourne Fringe.
There we go. A good Motley crew at the Bauhaus.
Yeah.
That's what we like. And the other thing I was going to ask, you know, sort of your any other Fringe show recommendations from someone in the show, in the festival. Sorry.
Absolutely. Well, of course, I would say grab your tickets for Club Fringe Heartthrob on October 11th. But also, In the first week of Fringe, so next week, there is the amazing Florian Wild is doing Hoedown Showdown at the Motley Bauhaus, which is a variety show. So new lineup of artists every night. You could see it every single night if you'd like. And who else? I would also recommend T for T, Trans Comedy Showcase. Who's doing Fringe this year? This is when I realize I haven't been paying enough attention to my news feed. There's so many great shows. I'd send everyone to the T for T Instagram account because they created an amazing Fringe roundup of the trans shows you can see this year. So I'm going to plug their plug.
Fair enough. All right. Well, there is a mountain, and I would like to thank Zilla and Brooke for putting me in touch with all the wonderful artists. And if there are artists who want to sneak in the next couple of weeks to get some publicity listening out there, or they hear about this, by all means, get in touch with me, then we'll make sure we can, have a chat. Eddie, absolute delight to have you in. Lovely to meet you. Chookers for a huge season of everything at Fringe. And, stay in touch with more shows. I'm sure the word Midsummer 2026 don't mean anything to you at the moment, but if you're doing something in that, naturally get in touch. But, just keep doing great things.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me today, Sally.
An absolute pleasure. Eddie Patterson there. And when I was thinking, what song can I play today that I hope and I think, with telepathic work, this will tap in from the most recently released a year ago Paul Kelly album, Fever Longing. Still, here is the final track, Going to the River with Dad. 3CR, 855 AM, 3CR Digital, 3CR.org.au, 3CR On Demand, Out of the Pan with Sally.
I'm going to the river with Dad. In the kitchen, the old kettle's singing. I'm gonna get up soon and get out of bed. Outside, the cockatoos are calling. I'm going to the river with Dad. I'm half awake and half dreaming. Now we're driving down that old bumpy track. Between us, the thermos of sweet tea steaming. Lines and spears and bait up the bag. That old river appearing and disappearing. I'm going to the river with Dad. All my brothers and sisters are still sleeping. We're going for the good silver mullet. At the back of the boat I'm steering. Dad's standing up front with his spear. Deep into the mangroves peering. I gotta keep my tiller hand steady. I don't wanna see my daddy stumbling and falling. I'm going down the river with Dad. With the song of the birds in the morning. But myself against him, I'm still measuring. Aiming for the mark of a man. Sometimes hitting it, sometimes missing. Trying to fill the unforgiven minute with the full 60 seconds of living. Yeah, I'm still on the river with Dave. heard some bringing the dawn in. We're going for the good silver molly. I gotta keep my tiller hand steady. For the good silver mullet, I gotta keep my tiller hand steady.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
CR has all kinds of music programs for you to hear. From blues to hip-hop, reggae, classical, punk, jazz, soul, indigenous, experimental, indie, metal and other music styles. Check out 3cr.org.au on the World Wide Web for more info.
Out of the Pan thanks Go Kindly for their sponsorship of this program. Go Kindly creates high-quality, locally made bedding, donating 50% of profits to support women and gender diverse people experiencing housing stress. Check out gokindly.com.au and take their pillow quiz.
Freedom of Species is a show about animals, for animals, listened to by humans. Tune in Sundays, 1 p.m. Born to be wild.
Born to be wild. 3CR, 8:55 a.m. 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au and 3CR On Demand. Out of the Pan with Sally. First broadcasting noon through one every Sunday afternoon. Thanks for your company. And yes, Freedom of Species coming up in around 11 minutes time. And they'll be talking anarcho-punk and animal rights with guest Pat. And Pat is, you might go, I think I've heard that voice somewhere before. Pat, one of the wonderful presenters on 3CR from Ruminations and Thursday Breakfast. So the 3CR community, intersectional in every way. And of course, thanks to Go Kindly, the sponsor of Out of the Pan, for their support of this show and this station, which keeps me rolling, rocking and rolling along as part of musical diversity. There was an unintended segue, although today it's been sort of gentle rock, louder classic rock, and we'll have an appropriate, well, I suppose you'd call them really a rock band, although this will be a quieter song to end the show. There is a hint. And yes, we've had our Pan Month. Talking of which, a reminder of the function next Tuesday, the 30th of September, 6 o'clock down at the Positive Living Centre in Commercial Road, Paran, is the Bi Celebration, a joint production of Bi Plus Pride Victoria, declaring my interest as a committee member, and Living Positive's Bi Plus Plus group, the group for Bi Plus people who are HIV positive. And we're getting good numbers, but it's not a sellout. So if you want to come along, registration free, there will be food. It's being organised, yum, 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 of various dietary diverse types. So please rock along, register, look for posts on Bi Plus Pride's social media and Living Positive social media as well. That should be fun. Great discussion group on Tuesday night for Bi Plus Pride Victoria as well. Lots of awesome discussion with awesome people, but as I always say, that's awesome by people is a tautology, because it's like saying awesome. Hello, Jenny. Good to have you listening in live. Thoughts on the AFL yesterday, and great to see queer artist Intash Sultana on mainstream television. Yeah. Look, I unfortunately had a bit of a glitch. I was going to watch the pre-game entertainment and other things sort of from somewhere else, and then couldn't get any internet on 7 Plus or KO, so I sort of had to get my way home and watch. So I didn't see Tash, but that is great, and I'm just seeing somewhere we still have a station ID from Tash Sultana. We might have. Not there anymore, but I know we used to many moons ago. So, yes, certainly a great queer artist and a great supporter of 3CR. So, yep, very awesome to see that. And AFL, Snoop Dogg. Look, I want to be careful here. Look, music is an emotional thing, same as all form of arts. And I just sometimes don't feel I can honestly connect to a lot of rap music. So Snoop Dogg isn't my thing, but you know, a bit hypocritical given, or double, some might say double standard arguments on the whole AFL thing with, Ivar Rankin, Snoop Dogg, all those sorts of things. No, not good. Look, he's a great entertainer. I don't deny anyone who's got that level. He obviously has some charisma and artistic spark and all those sorts of things, but perhaps not my thing so much. AFL season over, and there is another hint as to our last song. So I can't really comment on the entertainment as such, but the AFL is going to have to do some thinking off season, because I think people are not buying, I'll be polite and use the word nonsense and hype anymore in Australia, on things like AFL, that sort of thing. Impossible for me, I suppose, and I'm going to say content note 45-47, dude, not to comment on the ridiculous announcement from the US Secretary of Health, SIC, on the Tylenol and autism thing. What a load of Tommy rot. And one wonders, let's not get, yes, the relevant, knowledgeable people in health have, rejected this approach, and that's putting it very diplomatically. Well, we are in Libran season, and I'm a Libran, so my diplomacy is at its heights. I just think of, one wonders what, with these sorts of people, is it a diversion tactic? What else is going on in the world? Is it something that'll keep the Epstein files out of the headlines for a few days, for starters, or something else that administration is doing or doing wrong? I just didn't have a chance to look at it, but Mr. 4547 is about to send troops into another US city that's relatively progressive. Very difficult stuff. I mean, we, in World War One and World War Two, things seemed so clear-cut at that time. Both Germany in both World Wars and then Japan in World War Two were all the baddies, that sort of thing. And, the apparent friends of the US and the UK were all good, and now we're seeing our apparent friends, sliding further to the right, to put it mildly, and towards authoritarianism, to put it somewhat politely, and fascism, if we want to be blunt. It is a very
unsettling thing to watch. And, you know, it's sort of one wonders what we can do. You know, sort of people saying, Robert Reich, the former Trade Secretary, saying now is the time to stand up. But it's going to take a lot of effort to do it. I hope this radio show in some way, directly or indirectly, in 3CR helps achieve that. But coming back very quickly to the other parts of it, even if we could take that announcement sincerely, I mean, no medical proof whatsoever, but it just, I find it very bizarre that anything remotely resembling truth and fact seems to be going, you know, down the tubes. And I suppose the only thing we can do, or one thing we can do, maybe it's, I don't know whether it's futile or not, but at least if we try, let's just keep putting truth and fact out there. I know that my coming out late on autism has nothing to do with Tylenol or anything, or paracetamol or anything else. And as another article said, that this is yet another attack on women, probably wanting them to go through more pain in childbirth because of the misogynism and toxic masculinity of which most authoritarian regimes usually revel in. There it is. I'll finish on a positive note, and it's a way of sneaking in my obligatory wrestling reference. At a show on Friday, Renegades of Wrestling, 9 out of the 33 upfront performers identified, to my knowledge, as women or assigned female in some way. And I think that's pretty high ratio, apart from all women's shows, of which, of course, there have been some, Glow, Shimmer, those sorts of things. And there was a women's show in Melbourne pre-pandemic, and one all women's show in Ballarat last year, but they're obviously exceptions. But in terms of overall shows, that's a very high percentage, and just gave me a bit of a glimmer, which was a word I heard a few months ago. It's the opposite of trigger. It's those moments that bring you joy, and it gave me some joy. So there's a good wrestling reference with 5 minutes to go, and it's now 4 minutes to go. So I've got to go and make way for Caroline and Trev from Freedom of Species talking with Pat. Take it out today. If you hadn't guessed, the final track will be from Dire Straits' first album, their self-titled or eponymous one, appropriately called Lions. Well done to Brisbane. Well played. And I'll catch you next week with yet another fantastic Fringe Show guest artist. But in the meantime, remember to move your clocks forward next week. And that I'm Sally Goldner. Catch ya next week.
Sun going down, way over Dirty Town. Stalin's there sweeping around, crazy show. Yes, and a girl is there, high heeling out across the square. The wind it blows around. Flags upon the pole, waiting in the crowd to cross at the light. She looks around to find a face she can love. Church bell.
strapped